From 99.9 The Fan, this is The Drive with Tim Donnelly. Sponsored by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at CapitalFinancialUSA.com.
Football at 4. The Drive with Tim Donnelly, 99.9 The Fan. We started this last week when we were on the 10-show countdown. We're down to 8. 8 shows until the NFL draft. Each day until the draft, we are looking at a different position of the Carolina Panthers, looking at how they've changed since Dan Morgan and Dave Canales took over, and what might be expected in the draft at that position. I turned into a pirate or a seal.
Are we at ECU?
Good one. Defensive tackles is our position for the day. And it's funny because we're starting with the trenches, right? We're starting. Mm-hmm. We did interior offensive linemen and tackles on the offensive side last week. We're starting interior defense as we start the defense. If there's one thing that I've learned in the first three days of doing this, the Panthers are building from the inside out.
That's where they put a lot of money.
And I'm not even
a lot of money.
I'm not even just saying like the line. I'm saying the interior of the lines, both offensive and defense. They are starting their team. They are building the foundation within an arm's length of the ball before the ball is snapped. Everybody is a guard, a defensive tackle. They are right in the middle. 3 of the 4 highest paid defensive players on the team in both total contract money and average annual value are interior defensive linemen. 2 of the 4 highest paid offensive players on the team are interior offensive linemen. That is not a mistake. Derrick Brown, obviously the big money guy, but on defense they also have A'shaun Robinson and Shai Tuttle amongst the next 3 highest paid defensive players on the roster. But until they signed Jadeveon Clowney, it was 3 of the 3 highest paid players on the defensive side of the ball. They are prioritizing not just the lines, but the interior of the lines. So they could be done spending there this offseason, right? They could fill out whatever else they need in the roster with undrafted free agents and low-budget free agents later on, which would mean they're not going to draft an interior defensive lineman. Or the other side is they might load up even more. I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted a defensive tackle, I would say anytime from the 4th round on. I think every pick in the first 3 rounds, and they don't have one in the first, so every 2nd and 3rd round pick they have or trade into, I think they have to pretty much aim for starters, right?
Yes.
If you're picking day 2,
yes,
you have to pick someone you're ready to slot in right now to a starting lineup or by midway through the season. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got to be someone close.
It's got to be a key contributor right away.
I don't think there's that ability at defensive tackle right now because A'shaun Robinson and obviously Derrick Brown are there. So
Shai Tuttle coming back
Shai
as well.
Shai Tuttle, nose tackle. Like, so those are kind of already taken, the starting lineups. But starting in the 4th round, you know, I don't know if you can bank on any 4th round plus guy walking into a starting lineup. I don't think they necessarily need it, but they've shown the middle of the trenches is their biggest priority. So I could see them in that draft room going, you know, you can never have too many interior defensive linemen. If there's one they like, they can talk themselves into it because it's their main priority. Right? It's the same as, you know, Mike McDaniel with the Miami Dolphins, their coach. Starting about round 4, do you know what he's probably doing? You know, guys, we could use another receiver. We might not need it, but there's this guy I like because Mike McDaniel likes having a herd of fast guys. Right? There are certain teams that have certain positions where it's like, you know, we could use another. We don't need it, but we could. The Philadelphia Eagles, if there is an edge rusher from either Alabama or Georgia and they have not been taken by the 4th round, I'd almost guarantee they're going to do it whether they need it or not, because that's what they do. The Panthers are starting to look like an organization that if there's an interior offensive or defensive lineman that they like, they're just going to make the pick whether they need it or not. If there's one out there on a reasonable ask in free agency that they like, Dan Morgan's going to go like, yeah, sure, why not? Can't have too many. It's 3-and-D wing in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
It's lefty relievers in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
You can't have too many. Right? It's
defensive backs in the NFL.
there's a few position rim protectors in the NBA. It's like, yeah, you know what? I didn't come into the draft needing one, but if he's there and he's available, can't have too many.
Plus, we saw Ejiro Evero last season, just something he does often, but he likes to rotate his defensive line a lot. So adding Robinson, in my opinion, it allows LeBron Ray and some of those other guys that were starting last year to be the rotational pieces coming in. So it increases your depth because these guys are already familiar with the system too. And a guy like Robinson is going to free up guys like Josie Jewell and the other linebackers to just be free roaming and making tackles all over the place.
The goal in roster building is to get every position to where you have it on the interior defensive lineman. Mm-hmm. You have a stud who you think is an all pro. You have at least two that you're really excited about that are starting caliber NFL players that can take advantage of your stud who you think is an all-pro. And you have bodies to rotate in that you like, that know your system, that are capable. And if you want to add some, sure, right? If there's one you really like, well, you can make room. You want every position to be there. Because right now, there aren't many.
Especially with the tempo in which offenses play now, you're constantly substituting and you're in sub packages. You got to have the bodies if you're going to last not only just the game but a full season.
If you look at the
be
best,
effective.
If you look at the best position groups across the NFL, that's pretty much what you have, right? You look at the teams with the best receiver cores. There's usually one guy they think it's an all pro, two guys that are the other starters, right? Your number two and number three wide receiver. Usually costs a little bit of money, and you would trust to make big catches on third down. And then you have a couple other guys who, you know, after your stud runs four straight go routes and doesn't get the ball, needs a break, you bring a guy in. That's what the Panthers have built on the interior of the defensive line. But because they did that first, because they looked at the roster and they had none of those positions, because they chose to first get the interior offensive and defensive lines to that status, that tells me that there's never a draft where they would feel uncomfortable coming out of it with a good option at those positions. It's part of their identity. They want to be dominant interior offense and defensive lines. So if you told me there was one that they liked in the fourth round, I would not be surprised if they drafted him and explained it that same way. Like, hey, we want to win the trenches. We saw a guy that can help us do that. It was at a reasonable cost of draft capital. We had already filled a bunch of other starting roles or competing for starting roles in the first three rounds. So we had a pick that you know, could be a little bit more of a luxury. We went straight to our bread and butter. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. By the way, winning ugly is glorious at this time of year for an NHL squad. And when your ugly isn't even that ugly, it's even better.
Yeah, just win, baby.
Just win. There are small check marks to look for, small checkpoints to reach, which they're doing. But if you're winning when you're not bringing your A-plus game at this point in the season, that is very, very good. If you can be the lesser team on the ice, and I'm not saying this is the way it was yesterday, but the lesser team on the ice for long stretches and then still come out with a win, that gives you a chance to win a series. Right? That's stealing one. Is not stealing one in the postseason. Actually, it is, but stealing one, dominating, eking one out. You know what they all are? Wins. We learned that, for those of you that watched the Masters over the weekend, we learn it every year at the Masters. They don't ask how, they ask how many, right? They don't ask how many, or they don't ask how did your shots go as you went to put it in the hole. They asked, how many shots did it take you to get the golf ball in the hole? Doesn't ask. 16. That's what we keep talking about. 16 wins. The Canes have one more regular season game, then they need 16 more wins, and they're hoisting a cup. Well, guess what? If you steal one, I can do math. Ready? And I did this math ahead of time, so I don't have to question myself. If you steal one, that's 6.25% of the wins you need to win the Stanley Cup. They were down 1-0 and 2-1 to Chicago. They have more than twice as many wins this season than Chicago, but they got themselves behind two different times. Won the game. If you steal one, that's 6.25% of the wins you need once you get to the postseason. If you steal two, 12.5. I can just keep running that math up if you want me to. Here's Rod Brind'Amour on the tough game to play and getting through it.
I thought we were okay. It was a tough game to play. We got our eyes on some other things, and to get through a game like this, I thought we got going a little bit. I thought Peter Mrazek made some great saves, and we missed a couple little empty netters, and kind of then hung around, right? And we were able to power play and penalty kill was the difference tonight, which got us the win.
Power play and penalty kill, those are the ways to steal a game, right? If at even strength you're even with them, for lack of a better term, or if at even strength you're even a little behind, if you take care of special teams, that can be a way to steal it. So they need to build off of some of that going into the postseason. Now, if you tell me they're going to win 16 games dominating, I'm not going to go, well, they should win a couple ugly. Let's see if they could steal one. But the fact of the matter is, you're not going to go an entire postseason playing your A++ game every single night. That's part of the grind. That's part of the marathon. Here's more from Rod on balancing the preparation for the playoffs.
We all know that we're in the playoffs. So what do we – and, maybe we move up, but chances are probably not. And we're not – no one's catching us. Like, it's been a – that's why I give my guys a lot of credit, because we've been in this spot for a while. And yet we still find ways to get it done. So I think it says a lot about the group, and they understand they have a job to do regardless, and they've been doing it.
Balance is what I want to focus on from that. Because if you look at this past weekend, they won two games by multiple goals each. Yes, late game, empty netters and stuff helped that. But they won two games by multiple goals each. After the game, Aho. After the game, Rod Brind'Amour talking about how it was kind of a grind. But they got through it. And then at the same time, right, the balance, the flip side to that coin, is your big-time players continue to stay sharp. Just looking at those two games. Jake Guentzel, 3 points in a two-goal game. Jarvis, 4 points and a two-goal game. Svech, 3 points, 3 assists. Aho, a goal and an assist. Slavin, 2 points and a game-winning goal on Friday in his traditional defense, being exceptional throughout the weekend. Your top guys continued to stay strong even when everything was a little up in the air. You were grinding, or you weren't getting your best out of your best out of your best. Goalies played well, both of them. I've said this now going on, like, I think I don't quote me if I'm plus or minus a game here. I think for the last 5 games, I've been screaming, can we start the playoffs now? Let's just start them. Right? It's like warming up for tennis, right? You good to go? I want the Canes to yell to the NHL, can we just start it now? It seems like we're all warmed up. I don't think I'm going to get any looser. Let's just play. They're ready. The hard part is they had to play these 4 or 5 games, and the challenge was not to lose any momentum. I don't believe they've done that. They have one more coming up later this week. I don't even know if we'll see a lot of the big names in it. Right, there's a good possibility that there's very little to play for, if anything to play for at all, as far as seeding or pretty much all of that being decided. So at Columbus, you might get a healthy dose of some names we've only seen in writing rather than on the ice.
You might see a Spencer Martin starting goal, because, like you said, if, for example, we'll get into playoff scenarios later on, but if the Rangers beat the Senators tonight, straight up clean, Canes cannot win the Metropolitan Division. They're locked in second. So tomorrow's game, inconsequential for Carolina. If the New York Rangers win tonight, whether it's shootout, overtime, by 7, doesn't matter. So, again, tomorrow you might see the Bradley Nadeaus, the Scott Moros, the Jackson Blakes, these young guys that just signed their entry-level contracts. You might see guys like Aho or somebody, get a rest, because we've seen that over the last few days. Stahl got a break. Shea's got a break. Pesci, Chatfield. Teuvo Teravainen's actually sat for 2 games. So you might even see a little bit more of that tomorrow, depending on what happens tonight.
So there's a world, and that's kind of what I was alluding to, everything Dennis just said, where this past Sunday, yesterday's game against Chicago, was the final tune-up. at least the final full roster tune-up, the final close to a full dress rehearsal tune-up. You mentioned Teravainen wasn't out there, and that's fine, as long as it's nothing serious. But that's a good tune-up. They're on a five-game win streak. That's a good tune-up. Five-game win streak, all of them by multiple goals. That's a good tune-up.
I'm okay with that.
The coaches, their job is to have your team peaking going into the postseason. Gold star, Rod Brind'Amour. Shout out to Don Waddell for putting the team together at the trade deadline, and shout out to the players for making it work. They didn't have a full season to get in the same rhythm, but they're in the rhythm. If that Chicago game is the last tune-up, it was not the prettiest game of the year. It was not the most dominant victory of the year. But it might be the most important because it sent them into the postseason with the right attitude of our good guys are good enough to carry us. No matter what happens, we can overcome the adversity and get through it. And if we need to steal one, we might be able to steal one. Even if we find ourselves down early on twice to a team we have no business being down to. And you won't find any teams that they have no business being down to in the postseason. Everyone in the postseason is really darn good.
Everyone's a threat.
Which is why there's a lot of fans and some media members are doing all like the bracket watching to see who they're going to match up with and will it be this team? I'm going, if you think you're going to find like a weak link in the NHL postseason, it just doesn't exist. Show up ready to play someone good. Obviously, you want to know the scouting report and the game plan based on their strengths and weaknesses, but every team's going to be more strengths than weaknesses in the postseason. Show up ready to play your game and ready to mow down anyone in your way.